And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I'll kind of be overseeing the whole program today. Joining me on the line right now is our good friend and award-winning author, Dwight John Zimmerman. Dwight, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. It's always great to be back. I hope you and your family had a great Thanksgiving.
I think we all did. We all did. It was a wonderful experience. We have family members involved, and some of them are here in the studio with us today, so it's kind of a family affair as we're talking with people. I just wanted to let our audience know, and I wanted to thank our audience so much for all of the emails and cards and things that you sent in for Bob Gould, who is my partner, is recovering from surgery. He's doing fine, the last I talked with him, and he was very most appreciative of the correspondence that you sent him, and I'm sure that he will get back to you as soon as he feels better and can get online and do that. So, Dwight, tell us a little bit about the program you've got coming up, and then we'll go to a break, and we'll start off right away with your guests.
I'm really excited about this program, Dale, and we have three special guests, three retired SEALs, and our topic is going to be all the publicity that the SEAL community has had and, you know, the controversy surrounding the book No Easy Day, the television movie that about the Osama bin Laden raid, and then finally, what was in the news not too long ago, how some SEALs were involved in assisting in the development of the Medal of Honor video game. It's an opportunity rare for people who have been on the inside to come forward and talk about this and give their perspective. And I'm really happy that these three distinguished gentlemen have agreed to give their feedback and input, because I think it's really an important thing for our audience to know.
And I totally agree. I was just reading the Newsweek article. It was talking about the the Heroes issue of Newsweek from November 17th, and they're talking about, will the SEALs sell out to Hollywood? And I think this is a concern, and this is something that we will be addressing when we talk to your guests about people that have been involved in many of these special operations missions. You know, there's sort of this code of silence that they're supposed to observe pretty much their whole lives, and so it is a concern. I wanted to give you just a little bit of plug, Dwight, just before we go to our break, and that's your book, Lincoln's Last Days, which was written along with Bill O'Reilly. Is still up there, number one, number two on the New York Times bestseller list, and so I wanted to congratulate you on that.
Thank you, thank you. Before we go to the break, Dale, if you could give our listeners the phone number so if they want to call in.
I would be happy to do that as soon as I can put my fingers on it. We'll have to give it to them as soon as we get back. I think that it's a number that I call all the time, so you'd think I would know it. I know it's 877. Hold on, here we go, as we find it here.
The number for calling in today is 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825.
Thank you. And that was Nina, for those of you out there, and we couldn't do it without her. Thank you, Nina. All right, Dwight, we're going to be coming back right after this break with Navy SEALs, and we want you to get your call in. This is going to be fascinating, folks. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Thank you. And we are back on Veterans Radio, and running our program today is Dwight Zimmerman, and I want to give that number out once more time to our listeners. The number is 877-573-7825. Dwight, you're on.
Well, thank you, Dale, and welcome everyone to At Ease. And I'm your host, Dwight John Zimmerman, and I have three special guests today, all former SEALs and all who are authors. My first guest is New York Times best-selling author Dick Couch. Dick was a 1967 graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy. He served with the Navy underwater demolition and SEAL teams. He led one of the only successful POW rescue operations of the Vietnam War while a platoon leader with SEAL Team 1 in 1970. Upon release from active duty in 1972, Dick joined the Central Intelligence Agency, where he served as a maritime operations officer. He retired from the Naval Reserve in 1997 with the rank of captain. He's written numerous best-selling books and articles. His latest book is, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Swaspant, The Forging of a Modern American Ranger. Dick, welcome.
Thank you, Dwight. Happy to be here.
Okay, and excuse me, my next guest is Mark L. Donald. He is a retired Navy SEAL who's served more than almost 25 years in the military, and he's a medical officer. He's one of the highest decorated servicemen to come from the Afghanistan and Iraq War. His decorations include the Navy Cross, the Silver Star, the Bronze Star, Purple Heart, and his book, Battle Ready, Memoir of a SEAL Warrior Medic, is set for release from St. Martin's Press in March 2013. And my third guest is J. Robert Dubois, a retired Navy SEAL who is a security advisor who provides a lot of assistance to corporations and individuals who are in some of the hot spots in the world. His book is Powerful Peace, A Navy SEAL's Lessons on Peace from a Lifetime at War. And what he does is it's an amazing book that is a trieste for policymakers and warriors, media and educators. And it's a compelling and practical guide for problem solving, in a wide variety of situations. Robert took his experience learned in conflict and found ways to apply that to practical problems on the civilian side. Gentlemen, welcome to all of you.
Well, I think that they're all there, Dwight. We're just going to have to get them on there. It looks like we had a little technical issue again right as you were introducing them. So tell me a little bit about this issue that has come up with the SEALs while we get back in contact with them.
Okay. Well, the big thing that has come out was, of course, the book No Easy Day, The Autobiography of a Navy SEAL, which was a first-hand account of the mission that killed Osama bin Laden. This created a huge amount of controversy, primarily because of its timing, because it came out so soon after the actual mission. There was a lot of concern about the sensitive nature of material. Were there any security issues were the big concern? Yeah, and there was a political aspect of it as well to see whether or not this was going to help President Obama's campaign. Yeah, how much it actually influenced the campaign, of course, is arguable, but certainly there were enough people who thought about that. And the other one is, of course, even more troubling for a lot of people, was the whole television movie itself, which was seen on the National Geographic Channel shortly before the election itself. Of course, that got a lot of play the minute that it was announced that a movie was in the works.
Right. Dwight, we've got your guest back on the line.
Oh, good.
So you're ready to go.
Okay. Gentlemen, sorry about the little technical glitch there. Welcome aboard, Dick, Mark, and Robert.
Welcome. Good morning.
Be here.
Good morning.
Okay. So, Well, let's just go right straight into it. As you, I will be asking you individually for your take on, you know, the topics about, you know, the books, the publicity, and everything. But before we get into the specifics, a lot of the discussion, you know, in public is focuses on the, you know, the name of the, you know, the one group that performed the Osama bin Laden raid. People call it SEAL Team 6, but this is actually incorrect. And I'd ask all of you, what should people actually, you know, refer to this team as? Mark, let's go with you first.
Well, I think I'm going to – I'll actually defer. Let's I'd like to hear what the others have to say first. Thanks.
Okay. Well, then, Dick, let's start with you.
Well, I as far as those units, both Army and Navy, that carry those Tier 1 highly classified, I, as a writer and as a retired SEAL, I don't talk about them. I say there are some capabilities. I call them special missions units. You hear an awful lot about the elite of the elite, and I don't look at them as being elite. They're just, they have a very narrow mission set. Our special missions units have a highly focused skill set that they use. It's often direct action employed. They're very good at it, but they're not necessarily more elite. They're just more focused on that one particular skill set. So as far as their names, apparent commands, and what have you, I don't talk about it, and I don't write about it.
Robert, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. We have all sorts of terms and nicknames we use inside the community, inside the Army and the Navy. I think the most appropriate general concept for it is that there's a counterterrorism focus. As Dick said, the sliver within the services, within the Special Operations Forces, that is so focused on the decision activities they do.
So I guess... Mark, you would sign on with this thought as well.
Well, I think everybody in America has a curiosity about what's out there, but I think deep down everybody really just wants to know that there's organizations that exist that can take care of the needs of the country. And that's really what those organizations are about. And in order for them to be successful, then they really need to have anonymity. And I think if we really asked every household in America, do they really want to risk that security and especially the lives of those members and those families? The answer would be no. So what we have to do is just look past that general curiosity and in some cases just enjoy the make-believe entertainment of Hollywood.
Well, speaking of the make-believe entertainment of Hollywood, that kind of leaped right into the fire when we had the announcement of the television movie that aired just before the election on the National Geographic Channel. I am sure that went over like a lead balloon among the community. Robert?
We've had a number of internal dialogues within the special warfare community about OPSEC, about overexposure. And I'd like to go back real quick to what Mark said. I think that really is a key point on the whole matter. A rose by any other name smells as sweet. So when we're talking about the, as they said, precision units, the key for a lot of Americans is that they're out there doing what they're doing. That they're available to do what they can do. And we have, I've seen that a lot in my own following, Twitter, Facebook, and so forth. The public is very interested to know, and they ask lots and lots of questions about this or that activity. And when we, you know, I guess it's graciously declined to speak on specifics, they get that. I've seen it 1,000 times already. They'll say, you know what, I want to learn more about these guys because I want to honor them. And that's a very common theme. We want to respect, we want to honor, we want to acknowledge these sacrifices. And when the individuals involved choose not to be honored publicly, the public gets that and says, well, let's just go ahead and wave some flags anyway because we honor the event, we honor the activity, we honor the sacrifice for these people, and it isn't that big of a deal on the details of what their names are, where they work, and so forth. So back to the show, the lead balloon is a good term, and that stands for Matt's book and a lot of things going on these days. 2012 was the year of the SEAL book, I'd say, because, you know, we got bin Laden in 11, and a lot of books were released, and a lot of media attention was focused on how the SEALs were all, as you mentioned in the opening, are they selling out? And I can tell you definitively, no, the SEALs are not selling out. Individual SEALs have made individual choices. I made one, Dick made one, Mark made one for these three books we're talking about right now. But each individual judged according to his own best opinion about the appropriateness of releasing this or that topic. And we three have written very specifically not on on tactically sensitive missions, as far as, you know, like the hot stuff of Bin Laden. So in sum, it is a hot topic that the SEALs may be selling out, but we can tell you we are not. We, the teams, are not, and the team's leadership is very focused on reframing the question.
Robert, I'm sorry to interrupt. We're going on to our break, so let's just take a quick break right here, and we'll be back. This is At Ease, and I have a guest, former SEALs Dick.
Award for Valor in Combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Pharmacist Mate Second Class William Halliburton, Jr. used his own body to shield a wounded Marine. Details after this.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
A German Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Undaunted by the deadly accuracy of Japanese fire as his unit pushed the attack through a strategically important draw, Halliburton unhesitatingly dashed across the draw and up the hill into an open fire-swept field where the company advance squad was pinned down under a heavy concentration of mortar, machine gun, and sniper fire with resultant severe casualties. Moving steadily forward despite the enemy's merciless barrage, he reached the wounded Marine who lay farthest away and was rendering first aid when his patient was struck for the second time by a Japanese bullet. Instantly placing himself in the direct line of fire, he shielded the fallen Marine with his own body and staunchly continued his treatment, although constantly menaced by the slashing fury of shrapnel and bullets falling on all sides. Alert, determined, and completely unselfish in his concern for the helpless Marine, he persevered in his efforts until he himself sustained mortal wounds and collapsed, heroically sacrificing himself that his comrade might live.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
And we are back on Veterans Radio, and rejoining us is Dwight Zimmerman and his guests talking about the Navy SEALs.
Oh, welcome back. Now, one of the things that is, of course, paradoxical here is the fact that the SEALs, and not just the SEALs, but you guys are involved in these high-risk, high-reward type of missions that, of course, are very dangerous. But the payoffs, if they go off correctly, can be, especially in the case of the Osama bin Laden takedown, quite spectacular. So that being, you know, on the one side, the other side is, of course, you guys have to operate in tremendous secrecy and everything. So there's really this terrible tug of war here between wanting to know, and in some cases even perhaps needing to know, at least in a general sense, and the necessity for you guys to maintain as much secrecy as possible. Dick, your comments.
Well, I agree with what you're saying there. If I could have orchestrated this, I would love to have seen us have got Bin Laden. And it said that a special operations team had done this, been very nonspecific about it. I'm sure there were other special operators on that element beside just Navy SEALs. And so there's a whole continuum of operations and intelligence fusion that pulled that off. And to single out the Navy SEALs and bring all this attention to them is a little unwarranted. I realize we have an open society and some things you can't control, but it sure would have been nice to see this done and done by a special operations community rather than one single group.
All three of you are both retired SEALs and authors, so you have an important perspective here. I'd like for you guys to discuss the vetting process itself on your books, because that had to be very thorough. Mark, we'd like to begin with you on that subject, please. If you could just give our listeners the basic idea of what you had to go through to vet your book.
Well, there's already guidance that's out there by the government, or instruction for those that are on active duty or in the reserves or serving with the National Guard, that comes out from the Office of Security Review. It's pretty clear, delineates what needs to get done and the timelines that it needs to be done by. I think that guidance is probably going to be updated fairly soon. I would hope so. There's a few things that could probably use some revision in there, but it's pretty strong. It's done. It's written well, and I don't think there's really any question as long as people take a look at it. The only concern I have is, did all the authors understand that there was that guidance? I know we've got Dick's an extremely experienced author, so of course he's going to be quite familiar with that. Fortunately for me, I had some guidance from some good mentors that made sure that I was aware of that. But maybe some of the others didn't. So that's
Robert, your book touched on an awful lot of things. How was the vetting process for you?
Well, first I'd like to second what Mark just said about the updating of the review process. I have a very strong feeling that's true. It's going to be there's scrutiny going on right now, I'm sure, to make sure not only that the policy is followed or is clear to follow, or that is followed. You know, a lot of things exist on paper in the U.S. government, a lot of procedures and policies that just aren't followed necessarily. That's the nature of the bureaucracy. So much is written, so little is done in some cases. So because I'm based in Washington, D.C., I have the special privilege of going into and out of the Pentagon to talk to the actual security review team. I learned firsthand by watching it happen how it goes. And as he said, there is a very robust procedure in place that is expected to be followed. Not everybody knows how to do that, though. To second again on what Mark said, not every person, especially military operators, folks who have been in the field doing what they do for 5, 10, 20, 30 years, we don't understand the process. We don't understand the bureaucracy back behind the veil. But the way it works is the Pentagon Security Review Office receives a copy and distributes it within the Pentagon. They'll actually find some major somewhere who understands special operations or logistics or whatever the topic of the work is. And that person literally reads the book and just looks for indicators of classified information that would be spilled. And that's the ultimate purpose of the whole thing. They're not censoring. They're not saying you can't talk about this or that or express your opinion. In fact, that's a very sensitive topic, too. There is no censoring on us. However, classified information must remain controlled within the U.S. government.
Dick, you write fiction. Mark's and Robert's pieces were autobiographies. So what's the difference between writing a piece of fiction as opposed to, in Mark's and Robert's case, their autobiography?
Well, I'm a professional writer, and my last work was my 16th book that I published. So I've been at this a while. If you're writing a novel, you get to go hang out with your imaginary friends for a couple hours a day. And if you're writing a nonfiction work, and I do about half of each one, half my work's fiction, half is nonfiction. I work in nonfiction. That's a 100,000 word term paper. I've been doing this a while, and so I'm on the inside. I'm typically allowed to come on board. Most of my works address special operations training. I'm currently embedded with the Marine Special Operations Unit. And so I'm with them every day. I'm telling a story. It's not about me. I do offer opinions and what I think about this and that. But it gets read by the component, by the people within the command. And if they want, they'll bump, and they generally do, is bump it up to the Special Operations Command level. But I've never had any problems with that. Some things they'd like me not to write about more because they're parochial. I think with the vetting process, as I understand it now, with all these new SEAL books, some of my concerns are is not so much the tactics and procedures that need to be respected. Those are pretty easy. But they don't account for the content. Now, I know these SEALs and these Army Special Forces fellows, they're not warrior monks. But it pains me whenever I pick up a book and read about SEALs drinking and doing this and raising hell and what have you. Granted, they're not, these aren't choir boys, but I just don't, there's a lot of young men out there voraciously wanting to know what SEALs are about, and I hate to see this kind of dysfunctional behavior coming out in books. Even though there may be some truth to it, I guess maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I'd like not to see that in print.
I understand what you're saying there. I'd like to talk about the Medal of Honor video game. Have any of you guys played it or know of people who have? Robert?
Actually, no. I'm not involved in gaming in any way. My boys love it. They love the Medal of Honor games, but we haven't had this one in the house yet.
Mark, how about you?
I'm not a big gamer, although my son is. He's about ready to go into the Marine Corps. Very proud of him here soon. And I don't believe he's had that. He hasn't really mentioned it. But I think the question with the video game is... Well, I'll put it this way. I believe everybody in the military is obligated to submit to their commanding officer a request for their ability to moonlight. I could be wrong on that. I mean, it's very familiar in the medical community that you submit a moonlighting certificate or request. So, again, it goes back to the question, did these individuals, were they aware of it? Were they aware of that requirement? And if they were, did they notify their command? But the actual game itself, what was transpired, I'm not privy to any information that was transpired on that. And if I was, then that would in itself would be a security breach. And two, I really don't know much about video games. So that's about all I can say.
Okay. Dick, the most unusual aspect of it from what I've read in the papers and everything is, no, I haven't played the game either. Is that seven members of a team, active duty team, were involved in the development, whereas in the past, even with such a book as No Easy Day, it's a former SEAL. That was really a red flag for me. I can't remember of any other similar sort of action.
I don't, the video gaming thing is pearls before swine with me. I don't know anything about that. I was surprised at it. If you're on active duty, I'm sure these guys, if you're moonlighting and doing that type of thing, you need to be very careful about what you're doing because you are representing, you are in the Navy and you are representing a point of view from special operations. But past that... I almost can't comment on it because it's I know nothing about video games.
Okay, have all three of you read No Easy Day? Dick?
I have not.
Mark?
Yeah, I did. I read it within... I'm not ashamed to say I got the first edition and read it immediately when it came out for the mere reason that I knew that there would be statements made about it, so I wanted to understand it firsthand.
Okay, and what was your impression? Did you see any red flags in there?
I wasn't comfortable when I would read. Every chapter I read, there was some form, something that made me uncomfortable. But I believe the author was really looking to deliver a message of trying to inspire others to reach out beyond their what they feel that they can achieve and actually inspire them to go full force toward their dreams of possibly becoming a SEAL or serving within the military at any component. I think if he would have concentrated on just saying that, it would have been extremely helpful. I also feel that if he would have relied on others with a little bit more experience on doing this, the book would have been much better received. It's obviously received a great deal of attention economically and in the reading, being a bestseller, but it probably would have been better received overall by some people in the community. I think back, and, you know, I was fortunate. I had a good mentor. I didn't have to call Dick, but if I didn't have a good mentor, I probably would have called Dick because that's what you do. You reach out to those people that have been doing it for a number of years. He said it himself. He's a professional author. He's been doing this for a number of years. That's a lot of books that he's put out. That's probably what should have been the first stop, is going to someone within the community that has that experience.
Robert, have you read No Easy Day?
I've begun it. I haven't read it all the way through. I think I met Matt back when he was a new guy, fresh out of Buzz, but we didn't work together very much. And I didn't, my concern, I haven't, like I said, looked at the style of it, the rawness of it, but my concern always has been just the security review we talked about earlier. That I think is the key point, and it's not that the man's not a patriot. The exact opposite is he's a national hero, which makes it so uncomfortable for everybody. It's kind of an elephant in the room. He's done something inappropriate with the releasing without a security review, and at the same time, he's done incredible amount for our country, for freedom, literally. I'm not just trying to run for political office here. He literally has worked for freedom. He's literally sacrificed his body and blood, and so we have an uncomfortable discussion, a uncomfortable situation, but it has been a very powerful catalyst for, as I mentioned earlier, special warfare, and all of SOCOM is talking very intently within the community about how this won't occur again, and how we all need to think a little more carefully about what we do before we put public word out.
Okay. To our listeners, if you want to call in and ask questions of your own, the number is 877-573-7825. Again, the number is 877-573-7825. My guests today are former SEALs Dick Couch, Mark L. Donald, and J. Robert Dubois. We've been talking about, as one of them said, the year of the SEAL, for better or worse. Certainly a huge spotlight on things. One of the things that struck me in the book was that the difference of outsiders when they approach members, in this case of SEALs, but I would say anyone from the special operations community, in this particular case, the desire to find out who is the person who pulled the trigger, which to my way of thinking, that's rather ghoulish of an approach. And also, you guys, when you're working out there on the field on a mission, it's that of a team and not of an individual, correct, Dick?
Well, I think so. I didn't, who did this or did that. It's a team effort. I think I have when I said I haven't read the book, I've read parts of it and excerpts, and the whole notion of the book being written, I find it a little bit disturbing. There's some issues of trust here. First of all, you make an agreement you're going to submit work for review and you don't. That's a violation of trust. The second thing, this is one person who is representing what a group did. And that's kind of dangerous. So I think that maybe violated some trust with his teammates. But what concerns me most with all these books about SEALs is there's a lot of young men that are fighting their way through training. They're honing their skills. They want to serve their country, and they want to put their guns in this fight. And so now they deploy overseas. They're in Afghanistan, and a good mission comes up. And that task force commander says, well, you know, I could send my Rangers or my Marine, my Special Operations Marines, or I can send my SEALs. But do I want to read about this operation 2 years from now from some guy who thinks he wants to write a book about it? He may say, to heck with these SEALs. I'm going to send my Rangers out there to do this mission. So I think that all of this, a lot of this publicity is not doing service to the young SEALs that are preparing to go to war and are going to be fighting for years to come. I think that the violation of that trust and talking too much about it is doing these young men a great disservice.
Mark, your comments. Do you think that this publicity is going to be counterproductive for not just SEALs but special operations itself?
Well, I think what Dick said there was on the money. It is going to cause some people some consternation in leadership positions. And that's something that I think that our leaders or the leaders within DOD are going to deal with and deal with appropriately. But that was a great point, and I thank him for bringing that up. I think that there's some gains and some losses with everything that we do. The gains are obvious with the publicity. There's increased intention brings in ease on finding recruiting and people desiring this type of lifestyle. But then it goes back to what lifestyle they really think that they are going to get, because it's not what they're seeing right now. It's a tough life. It's a life that's dedicated to service. And I think if things were just looked at a little bit more in the perspective of how things actually are, it would have been much easier overall. But the real question here isn't so much what is the information going to come out. There's always a flow. There's always a desire for information. I mean, that's just natural human curiosity. And there's a time for media attention. The hard part is trying to figure out when that is. Operation Eagle Claw, or the Iranian hostage rescue attempt, is a good example of that. But the question that we have to deal with is both as individuals and especially for our government is how to deal with this need or this desire in relation to today's immediate flow of information that we have, because sometimes messages get out that are just not controllable by the government or even the people that are involved in the operation itself. And I think that's where the government's probably focusing on. And I believe that's where the other two are discussing as well, that just reminders within the community that we need to be cognizant of that. And that's probably one of the biggest things that got away from the people that spoke up a little bit too soon.
Robert, do you think that, especially the successes that have happened, that there will be almost a gut emotional reaction by a civilian community that people in the special operations community are, like, because of the rigorous training and everything, that they're supermen and can do anything, and as such, there will be a tendency to just send in them?
That's a common misperception to begin with. That's been around for decades, as long as there's been special operations designated people in the service in America. The Superman concept is one that we have always known inside the community is a complete myth, that we are absolutely team-based and team-dependent. You know, you mentioned earlier about the interest to learn who the shooter was for Bin Laden or other spectacular events like that. That's human. And Mark said it's a popular interest to know who did what and when. We look at Audie Murphy, we look at Michael Jordan, we look at Neil Armstrong. Any of these one man names we know did not do what he did in a vacuum. They're the people we pin the story on because they were the one we really got our eye on. But each one of them has said 1,000 times, no, it wasn't about me. It was about us together doing this thing, and my name happened to be the one in the front of the story. That's the same thing in the Bin Laden raid, and somebody did put a bullet in Bin Laden. Somebody was the guy that pulled the trigger. But
that's something that the SEAL teams do not want to talk about. And as Dick mentioned, we aren't. It wasn't a SEAL operation exactly. I mean, SOCOM is SOCOM. It's a purple force. It's all the services together, putting their special operators and their intelligence analysts and their support personnel behind an incredibly important mission. And that's what happened in this case. And somebody was the guy that was in the front of that story. But we respect that team culture intently.
Okay. The unit received the presidential unit citation. Dick, do you feel that was an appropriate recognition? Because that meaning it is a team success.
Well, I think so. That would seem appropriate there. And of course, the SEAL Team One and a number of organizations have received that similar honor. It's just a recognition of a job well done, and I see no reason why. I think that was appropriate.
Mark, your comment?
I think all of them would have enjoyed the fact that they're all recognized together, and that's really the guiding key. So it seems appropriate.
Okay, Robert?
This is my own personal experience coloring the story, but in my opinion, we actually, as special operations individuals, get less recognition, less medals than sometimes the administrative staff who are around the office all day long and have a chance to write up their own medals. So, yeah, I think it's a very good thing that the guys were recognized in that way. I think the president, I don't think it's an Obama or a Romney or a Bush issue either. I think the President of the United States would be right in any case to recognize this group for what they've done.
Well, of course, there's kind of a tough standard there since in the case of special operations, they are held to a higher standard. So them doing something really extraordinary is compared to that of a conventional warfare unit. It's almost a can't-win situation. Dick, would you kind of agree there?
I don't know about that. There's an awful lot of... Sometimes I think these conventional units are that we don't hear much about. There's some fine young men that are toiling away. They're out on patrol that are... serving some long, hard time in these active theaters, maybe they don't get recognized enough. I always felt, a long time ago when I was on active duty, we almost got too much recognition for what we did, and we didn't do it for that. We did it because, we were team-centric. We served with some great people, and it was our time to do this, and we kind of felt, well, maybe we should thank the country for having the chance to go about this. So I think that they deserve the accolades they get, but let's not forget all those conventional forces have been, for the last decade, have been coming and going and almost in obscurity.
Sorry to interrupt, but we're coming on our break. This is At Ease, a Veterans Radio Network, and we'll be back in just a moment.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
When the last warrior keep the pride? Who's gonna sing the war song? Who's gonna stand in the face of the slides? Who's gonna right all the wrongs?
That was Michael J. Martin, a Vietnam veteran, Silver Star recipient himself. We're back on Veterans Radio with Dwight Zimmerman and his guests talking about Navy SEALs and the operation that occurred with Bin Laden, and also discussing the book No Easy Day. And I'm going to put in my two cents. This is Dale Thronberry. I worked with some special operations 40 years ago, and you know, we were the mindset that nobody needed to know what we did ever. And, you know, we had to sign a release in all these different forms. And that's the thing that I think that upset me about the book. And, you know, he says in there that he wanted to get the story out so it got out correctly. And, you know, we're all about telling the stories here on Veterans Radio. But I have to agree with you, Dick, that, you know, he could have waited a little while and maybe written an even better book. Sorry, Dwight.
No, that's all right. Part of the controversy is the timing itself, because in some cases it is years, if not decades, from when an action was done to when it was later written about, at least in detail. Now the time frame has been compressed incredibly, and I was just shocked myself to see it happen this fast. I'd like to touch on perspective here, the development of special operations itself, because with Dick, we have the early years of the SEALs, and when they weren't exactly part of the embraced with the way they are now, and then we have Mark and Robert here from the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts. So I'd like to discuss with you guys how perception and the activities have evolved over the years. Dick, can you tell our listeners, in general, your experience with the outside community and how SEALs were treated by the higher-ups?
Well, I think that's what you've expressed is a nice way of saying that these other guys are young guys and I'm an old guy, is what you're saying here. But, you know, I can remember being in the teams and somebody, if you said you were a Navy SEAL, they'd say, finally I said, well, I'm a diver. You know, we're kind of guys who do diving, and we also have some other things that we do as well, because nobody really knew what it was. There were only about probably 400 on active duty, never more than probably 100, 110 guys deployed in Vietnam at any one time. So it was sort of nobody knew quite what we did, although most people in the Navy sort of did. It was all direct action and very little of much else. And the training, you went through BUDS, 4 months of training, and then maybe a couple months of work up with a platoon, and you were on deployment and doing it. So it was a little different game back then. I will say that everybody's saying, like, well, you old guys must have really been good. And I'm going, like, are you kidding me? It's like Bob Cousy trying to guard Michael Jordan. The guys today, they've taken their game to such an elevated level that us old guys, we stand back and shake our heads and say, we just can't believe how good they are today. And said with a lot of pride in that professionally, what they've accomplished. And also those the guys we never hear about, the quiet professionals that are still coming and going to the battle space, doing their job, and don't ask a lot of recognition other than the privilege to serve.
Mark, your thoughts?
Well, I think I came in the mid-'80s and was fortunate enough to have some really strong mentors along the way that had told me and taught me both about the history of the teams and the good and the bad that came with it. And I think that made a big difference in where things went in my life
I've seen things progress from training. I've seen them progress in equipment. But the one thing I would say that I think that Dick isn't given enough credit to is I don't think the attitude or the personal perseverance has changed at all. I do appreciate that he and others recognize that there has been an increase in the abilities, but I think those same abilities would have been achieved with all the men that he served with and himself had they been given the same equipment and training opportunities. It's just a matter of technology and time, but the basics of special operation lay with the individuals themselves and their attitude and who they are. And even those that have been, I think, fallen under criticism for speaking out, and some of them perhaps too much, they all still have that same attitude. And I think that's what hurts the most. Robert alluded to this earlier. It hurts a little bit with that because it's very similar to having someone in your family do something wrong. You can't just throw them away. You have to take care of them. You have to embrace them. You have to figure that out. But sometimes it takes a little bit of time for them to understand what went wrong. But I appreciate everything that he said. But, Dick, you it's the same people. Same people. So you guys would achieve the same things.
Robert? Well, first I'd like to comment on what Dick was talking about, the guys in the 70s and the guys in the 90s and OOs. We had some World War II frogmen come to my team about 10 years ago. And, you know, we were a bunch of young, well, I wasn't so young, but younger by 10 years than I am today. We were a bunch of modern SEALs at a SEAL team in our SEAL kit and with our SEAL gear and SEAL TTPs or tactics, techniques, and procedures. And these guys were, you know, little old men in wheelchairs or walking around slowly. And I was very, very, very moved to be in the presence of those men. This was the fathers. We sing Jody's and Bud's about being the sons of UDT or underwater demolition teams. These were the men who set the standard in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And to us, it doesn't matter how much, as Mark said, how much technology we add to the mix, the ironclad character beneath that kit. You could be the naked warrior, literally swimming in shorts and a knife and bear grease to go and blow up obstacles to clear a way for ships to come through. Or you can be the most modern, kitted-up guy charging around, kicking doors, and nearly flying. Pretty soon they will be flying, I'm sure. No jetpacks, but it's the same core. It's the same exact person beneath all those layers. And that's why, and one of the old guys was talking to me. He said, "Man, I really admire you young guys, what you could do today." I said, "Sir, we admire you. You did everything we do, but with less privilege, less opportunity. You did it on grit."
Did you have something to add?
No,
I think the gentlemen are quite right. You know, we look back at some of those guys from the Greatest Generation, and every generation, I think, one of the things about, I think that the brotherhood that works very well is I'm treated with a great deal of respect by all special operators and SEALs and what have you, and I'm very humbled by that. And by the same token, when I am with all my old cronies from way back when, we just shake our heads with a great deal of pride. Look at the new guys, what they can do, how they're doing it, and their capabilities. So It goes up and down the line, the respect and admiration and appreciation of those that have gone before us and those that are continuing on.
Okay. Mark, did you have something that you wanted to add? I'm sorry.
No, I think what Robert said, I just wanted to say what Robert said was well said. You know, it's that area there. I do want to add this, though. Dick had discussed how, you know, he tells the stories of others, and he does that quite well. If you haven't read his books, I encourage people to do so. I always learn more about history and about even the community for which I was lucky enough to serve from those books. But there's also a strength that exists with telling a personal story.
that you can't get by telling a story of others, because I feel I cannot speak for what others experienced, felt, or what they were thinking, especially when it deals with areas of privacy or personal matters. So there is a need, I believe, for personal stories to come out. I know Robert wrote a very compelling book, and I applaud him for doing that. But so there's these things that we have to have, I think, as authors, as people, as a society. The key is working together and discussing it among people that we trust, finding a good mentor.
Yeah.
And one of the things the community, special operations community, may want to consider, although the government, there's a definite divider between the government and between, you know, the veteran community or the freedoms that one has, is probably looking at an advisory board to sit down and to talk with people, authors that are thinking about this, to help give some guidance. I think by doing something like that, it could possibly help prevent things like this. And I'm interested to hear what Robert's and Dick's thoughts would be in something like that.
I would love to hear that too, but unfortunately we are approaching the end of the program, so I'm afraid that we're going to have to invite you three back for round two. But I want to thank my three guests here, retired SEALs Dick Couch, Mark L. Donald, and J. Robert Dubois. I'm really happy that you took time out of your schedules to be with me on the show. Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Thank you,
Mr. Dwight.
Thank you, Dwight and Dale.
Oh, you are more than welcome. More than welcome. Good job, Dwight. Always a good program, as usual. And it is rather exciting, and I wanted to get those guys back on, along with some of the special operations personnel from all the other services, because I didn't even realize up until recently that that the Air Force and Coast Guard, all of them had their own special ops units, and they are coordinated. The one thing in that book that he did talk about was how coordinated the Army and the Navy and the SEALs and the Air Force were together to work on that particular mission, and I think that was important to bring out.
I agree with you. It is one of the things that I learned with my book, Uncommon Valor, about the Medal of Honor and the warriors from Afghanistan and Iraq who received it. I do have special operations missions mentioned in there, and then in my earlier book, Beyond Hell and Back, which dealt with seven critical special operations missions, you see that it is an integrated joint effort. When Robert was talking about being purple, purple is the color for joint operations missions.
Well, I got to cut you off now because we're running out of time for my promo for next week, and that's going to be that we're going to be talking with Medal of Honor recipient Patrick Brady, a helicopter pilot, so I'm anxious to talk with him. In the meantime, this is Veterans Radio. Have a wonderful week coming up, and until then, you are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.